I greet you in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. I want to draw to your attention that my Bible is much smaller than Michael's. But no less effective. We'll have a Bible off later, yeah. That last song was great. I'll talk about this in a minute, but we were singing that in the vans when we were down in Mexico last month, and it's just got such great energy. Okay, John chapter 15, beginning of verse 1. I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine grower. He removes every branch in me that bears no fruit. Every branch that bears fruit, he prunes to make it bear more fruit. You have already been cleansed by the word that I have spoken to you. Abide in me as I abide in you. Just as the branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine. You are the branches. Those who abide in me and I in them bear much fruit, because apart from me you can do nothing. Whoever does not abide in me is thrown away like a branch and withers. Such branches are gathered, thrown into the fire, and burned. If you abide in me and my words abide in you, ask for whatever you wish and it will be done for you. My Father is glorified by this, that you bear much fruit and become my disciples. My colleague in ministry, Diane, just led a group of 45 of us on a trip down to Mexico. It was in the middle of March, and she and her husband, Simon, are now well into their second decade of doing this, taking teams of people from our church and our community, and we traveled down into northern Mexico where we build houses for people who could do with a bit of a helping hand. And I know in conversation with some other folks here that others of you have done something quite similar. We do this under the umbrella of Amor Ministries, which is an organization that is based out of San Diego, and they work very closely with a group of Mexican pastors who live in that area. And this last trip was my fourth, and it was especially neat for me because my whole immediate family, were able to come. So my wife is there, and my son, and my daughter, and her new husband, and that was really wonderful. When we are in Mexico, we live very, very simply. We camp out on one of the pieces of property that Amor Ministries have access to. The camp we stayed in this time is just outside of Tijuana, and it's pretty big. It can actually house up to 1,800 people, though while we were there this time, I suspect there were probably about 75 or 80 of us there. It's a big, flat, sandy spot. It's out in the middle of the countryside, and it has one unique feature. On one side of the property, there is an old vineyard. And I confess that this vineyard struck me as kind of odd. It looked a little out of place to me, because I don't normally equate Mexico and vineyards. And it was so unexpected, I took a few pictures. So, Greg, have we got some going on there? Yeah. And I'll try next one. You see the kind of the irrigation underneath there? I think we got one more. Yeah, okay, if we can just stay on that one, thanks, Greg. Now, I find it a bit sad looking. It looks like it's been abandoned. It looks kind of forgotten, and I kind of wonder, you know, is this what's left of somebody's dream? as I said, I don't normally think about vineyards when I think of Mexico. You know, I think of Mexico and alcohol, I'm thinking like tequila, you know, or Corona, you know, that kind of thing. But what do I know? I did some investigating and discovered that actually Mexico has a pretty substantial wine industry. I mean, who'd have guessed? In fact, the oldest vineyards in all of the Americas are located in Mexico. And the state we were staying in, it's the state of Baja California, it has had vineyards producing for more than 300 years. And in fact, the wine industry there is actually really, really big. And they produce something like 90% of all the wine that is grown and produced in Mexico. So as you can imagine, there's a thriving local business for wine tours and all that kind of stuff. Now, I don't really know the backstory about this vineyard. I've tried to find out some of its history and have been unable to do so up to now. But, I mean, I have been wondering, like, what happened? What happened here? Was the soil poor? Did they run out of water? Did they fail to properly market the wine they were producing? Did the competition, was it just too tough? Was their product not popular enough? Or did the owners, did they have other projects that kind of diverted them from the vineyard? As I said, I don't know what happened. But what I do know is that there's a good-sized vineyard there, and it's no longer producing. Interestingly, all the structure is still there. There's support for largely non-existent vines, and the irrigation system is still in place, but only a few of the plants have survived. You can see one in the foreground there. They're pretty small. And I just kind of wonder, like, what happened? The scripture reading we have tonight is a really robust one, and that shouldn't surprise us. It's located in that really intense section of John's Gospel, the farewell discourse. It's after supper. It's the night before the crucifixion, and Jesus is offering some final instruction before he prays a rather lengthy and tender, and I would even say kind of triumphant prayer that we find in chapter 17. Our text, chapter 15, it begins with the eighth of Jesus' I am statements. It's the last of the I am statements. You remember earlier on in John we heard, I am the bread of life, I am the light of the world. Before Abraham was, I am. I'm the door, the good shepherd, the resurrection and the life, and of course, I'm the way, the truth, and the life, which was noted here by one of our speakers last year, something of a bit of a conversation stopper in some UC circles for some reason. But Jesus speaking here is no gentle Jesus, meek and mild. But then why would he be? These were very, very difficult times. These were very challenging times for Israel. Conflict was in the air. The future was most uncertain. And against that backdrop, Jesus entered into these conflicts. And he actually raised the tension in the conflicts. And he was pointing to a revealing of God's purposes. And his leadership at this time was focused and it was bold. And now he says, I am the true vine, which I believe to be the most in-your-face of all the eight I am statements. Now, the metaphor of the vine and the vineyard, of course, is well established in Judaism. The scriptures are full of references. Typically, it serves as a kind of a metaphor for God's covenant people. The vineyard in the Hebrew scriptures is tended by God with this expectation that it would produce fruit. And yes, the covenant people, they were usually found wanting. Jesus seemed to like this metaphor. All the gospel writers remember him using it, but I think it's in John's gospel that it becomes most pointed. And Jesus says, I am the true vine, or as I want to just call him Eugene, as Peterson calls it. He feels like Eugene. But as Eugene Peterson renders it, I am the real vine. I'm the true Israel. God's purpose is found in me. I'm like, that's quite a statement. Moreover, it makes sense that if Jesus is the true vine, then it suggests that there might be some other vines that aren't so true. Well, that's kind of alarming. But he's only starting, of course. He's not only telling us who he is, but he's telling us who we are as well. The disciples, they're the branches of the true vine. The keeper of the vineyard, the vine dresser, he says it's the Father, it's God. Branches that aren't bearing fruit, they're cut off, they're discarded. And even those branches that are fruitful, they'll be pruned by the vine grower to make them even more fruitful. They're pruned, they're cleansed, and Jesus urges his friends to remain, to abide, to stay with the vine. Because that's the only way the fruit will be grown. By being connected to the vine, by being connected to Jesus. Don't remain joined with him. Those branches will just wither away, and the only thing they'll be good for is for burning. It says that they're essentially useless. So remain attached to the vine. Abide. And so what does that abiding look like? What does a congregation, what does a church that's connected with the vine, what does that look like? This is such a weighty passage. And I go so far as to say I find this passage slightly alarming. I mean, how many times have I tried to comfort myself, usually having looked at some rather worrying numbers? How many times have I tried to comfort myself with the statement, well, our job isn't to be successful, our job is to be faithful. I'm not the only one. And no, this passage is not using the language of success. It's calling for fruitfulness. It's really clear that results are expected. And it's interesting, in a culture that usually first frets about wages before focusing on production, this is challenging stuff. I mean, where is the stuff seems to be the question. It seems from this passage, at least, we are not being graded on good intentions. And so I find myself wondering, with some concern, what does it mean to be fruitful in our time and place? Now, I am a bit hesitant to make too many statements about how we've judged fruitfulness in our denomination over the last decades. It's complicated. It has been complicated. But we've more than a few times prefaced our public statements by reminding people that we are indeed the largest Protestant denomination in the country, just in case you're interested. But I'm not so sure that is necessarily the most reliable indicator of fruitfulness. Though it's an interesting one. And if it is, then is it not safe to say that there has been some pruning? We all know the figures, and these are tough times for all mainline churches in North America. And probably most churches in North America, never mind mainline churches. These are just difficult times. So, what is fruitfulness for the church today? Is it planting new churches? That was interesting, Chris. Thank you for being here. I think it probably is. Is it changed lives? I certainly think so. Is it living with the reality of a maybe smaller church, but maybe one that places much, much higher emphasis on discipleship over membership? That makes some sense to me. I also can't help but remember that the most basic purpose of the grape is to provide for another generation of the plant. It's seed, right? Is fruitfulness producing a generation of new believers? I think so. And surely there are more types of fruitfulness than that. Those who know me well will know that I can make no claims to substantial expertise in the area of gardening. But I am occasionally tasked with some pruning at home. I usually do this under the most watchful eye of my wife, Tevis, who is way better at this than I am, so why don't you do it? But anyway, it's...
That's a very good question.
Well, yeah. But I digress. But we always seem to be taking off more than I think's safe. Usually it's the roses and the rhododendrons. And the conversation from my end is, are you sure this is the right amount, hon? It looks a little severe. Earlier this year, I did a retreat day with a group of other pastors from a range of churches and denominations. It was a really good day. And partway through the day, one of our number, who is from the Okanagan Valley, in the context of another discussion, he spoke about his experience in local vineyards. Now, when I first came to Canada, it was in the late 1950s. And, gosh, I'm getting old. Anyway, it was in the late 1950s, and the reputation of Okanagan wines was, how shall I say this, mixed. You know, a BC wine was usually considered a bit of an adventure. The bottle was usually the preferred choice in things like hand-to-hand combat over to actual drinking. But you know, something happened. In the mid-1970s, things shifted radically. And the quality of wines has just grown exponentially. And Okanagan wines today are really, really good. They're well-respected wines, and they have prices to match, I'll warn you. Anyway, this fellow at the gathering was remarking on how severe the pruning of vines needed to be. And vines are massively cut back during the winter months. Around here it would be December to March. And like up to 90% of the vine's branches would be pruned away. 90%. And that strikes me as a lot. But apparently if it's done right, and you have the right ratio of clusters of grapes to leaves, you get this really rich-tasting fruit. And you know, when he said that, I thought of how we'd begun to try and do some of that in the congregation that I serve. And we're trying actually to do less things. We're trying to do less stuff, but we want to do those fewer things much better. And the question is how do we know what those good things are? How can we get over our fear of letting good things go? We heard a little bit of that in Michael's excellent sermon this morning. It isn't a matter of letting bad things go. That's easy. But it's letting good and worthy things go. I was at a recent BC conference executive meeting where we were discussing just what we are trying to accomplish. I think that is the most worthy thing for an executive to do. Why are we doing what we're doing? What are we trying to create? And amongst all the goods that we're looking at, amidst all the good things that we are constantly being advised to be about, and believe me, there are no end of voices urging us to move in all different directions, sometimes in opposite directions. I imagine there's someone else in the room who might know something a bit about this. Yeah, how do we choose? Or maybe to stretch the metaphor just a little bit, how do we pay attention to the vine dresser? How does one abide? What do we do when we're abiding? What does remaining in the vine look like for a church today? I still remember one of the comments I heard from one of our number here last year, that this was the most diverse gathering that they'd been to in the church, and it was someone who I know had been to quite a few. And I've been reflecting on that over the last year, and I think I have to agree. To my surprise, I've encountered a wider range of opinion here than I found in just about anywhere else I've been in the church. And it kind of surprised me, but we are such a mixed bag. Oh my gosh, are we? But here's the one thing that brings us together. I'm getting dangerously like Curly from City Slickers here. The one thing that always preaches. But our one thing is the vine, right? It's the vine. What we are daring to call the true vine. And the question that certainly has gone through my mind is will that be enough? Will that be enough? In this time of pruning, and is there any argument that we're in a time of serious pruning? In my part of the country, you can readily smell the smoke of discarded branches. In this time of pruning, what is it that will remain? And is it enough for us to simply confess Jesus as Lord, as the true vine? You know, I think that God can do an awful lot with a church, with a congregation, with an association, dare I say, with a denomination, who are prepared to make Jesus the point of their fellowship, who are prepared to take the risk, I like that word, to take the risk of knowing him, because it's a risky business, but what a ride. In fact, I am firmly convinced that this is the primary task of a disciple. It is the primary task of a congregation. It is the primary task of a denomination. And the fruit of that commitment, oh, it is something to behold. There will be an abundance of the richest tasting fruit. Much good will result. Abide. My friend from the Okanagan did mention one other interesting thing about caring for the vineyard. He noted that pruning is not something that is done from a distance. Have you thought about that? The vine dresser does all this by hand. And she does so with skill, and she carefully looks at each branch and discerns just the right cut to make. And that requires that the vine dresser get right in there, gets really close, gets in amongst the branches. And I wonder, really, in the most interesting days that face us, as a denomination, as congregations, as individuals, in this time when we're seeing some branches trimmed, some really good and healthy branches trimmed away by the God who we are assured wants us to be even more fruitful. Perhaps we're also encountering or entering a time that is filled with the possibility of extraordinary intimacy with God. Because, you know, like the vine dresser, getting right close to us as he clips and trims and makes the branches more healthy and more fruitful. And this is going to be really, really hard, but it could be really, really good. Being that close to God. Being that close to God. Final thing. On my first trip to build in Mexico, one of the things that really saddened me was that everywhere I looked, there were just so many unfinished buildings. I mean, really, there were seemingly abandoned foundations and partially completed walls and buildings with roofs, but there'd be no doors, no windows. And it seemed to me a picture of shattered dreams and unfulfilled hopes. And honestly, I found it really depressing. I found it really hard to look at. And so I mentioned this to Howie, who's the Amor staff person who was working with us and looking after us. And he immediately said, well, no. That's not what you're seeing. See, because money is in such short supply, you can't build a house all at once. So you save up for the purchase of the land, and it's 5 more years, and then you can afford to lay the foundation, then it's 5 more years, and then the walls go up, and then it's 5, you know. And so often it will take a whole generation for the owner to build a home. Whole generation. And I realize that appearances, wow, for a newcomer to Mexico, appearances can be quite deceiving. What appeared to me was a heartbreak might actually be pointing to a rather interesting and hope-filled future. Which got me to thinking about that vineyard in the campsite. Sure, there are lots of other vineyards in Baja California. They're fruitful, productive vineyards. The climate and the conditions, they're right for growing. Yeah, but I wonder about this particular one. I mean, I wonder, is the owner coming back? Is it done? Has it had its day? Or might the owner of the vineyard be still imagining something quite wonderful? Amen.